Hello and welcome to Stretford Paddock. We're here for the Paddock podcast today. Sorry we're a little bit late. We're having some incredible technical difficulties. And not only were the difficulties incredible, the solution is even more incredible. I'm joined by Casey. How you doing, mate?
I'm all right, thanks, Joe. How are you?
You can't hear me. I got scared then. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. And Kieran, how are you?
Mate, I was a bit stressed about 5 minutes ago, as you probably see. Joe mentioned that a few technical difficulties shouldn't come as a surprise. It was me, but we're ingenious. So basically, as people know, I don't have the best Wi-Fi in the world. I also don't have the best laptop in the world either.
For some reason, background. Let's
or the best background or the best, you know, a bedroom, house, whatever.
You've got a lovely set of hair.
But I do. It's a bit long now. But basically, what happened was the mic wasn't picking up what Joe was saying. Or sorry, I couldn't hear what Joe was saying, but Joe could hear what I was saying. So, look at that. That's how I'm hearing Joe, baby.
I rang him on WhatsApp. Casey has joined the call on WhatsApp. There's a WhatsApp call between me, Casey, and Kieran that Kieran is using as the audio so he can hear us and we can hear him through his headset. What an awful...
Can you all hear Kieran?
Can we all hear everyone?
Yes, glorious. It's glorious.
It's fantastic. It works. That's all that matters. We're going to be talking a bit about Paul Pogba today, and it looks like he's going to be staying, doesn't it? Like, there are more rumours coming out that Juventus can't afford him or that they've... We'll talk a bit about this salary cap in a minute. More rumours coming out about Madrid and Juventus not being able to afford him and not being willing to pay the money for him than actually anyone seemingly ready to stump up 80 million or whatever it would be. So I think it's looking increasingly likely that he's going to stay. What do you think to that, Casey?
I mean, when you look at the situation, you can't really see who's... There's only a few clubs who can afford what we think Paul Pogba's worth. And they don't seem to... never seem to be offering it. Because obviously you've got your Real Madrid, you've got your Barcelona, you've got probably your Juventus's, and maybe PSG. And in the situation where no one was going to stump up the money anyway, it seems like less people are going to stump up money because of the whole coronavirus thing. So I feel like the situation comes about that most people who are looking for big moves this summer are going to end up staying where they are. So yeah. I'm happy for it. I'd like to see Pogba and Bruno Fernandes together, but we'll just have to see, won't we?
What do you think, Kieran? Do you think he'll stay?
I think it comes down to... Basically, I think we can all agree Paul Pogba wants to leave Manchester United. And he loves... Yeah, I know. It's brilliant. I just can't get over how brilliant. Why is no one really thought of this sooner?
It's going to fall at some point. Yeah. It's going to fall.
If only they could come up with a way or a device that could not have to use a phone and a laptop to call someone. That'd be amazing as well.
That's a bit too far-fetched for me, I think. To Paul Pogba leaving, I think the big reason Paul Pogba wants to leave, everyone can agree with, is the lack of winning trophies. I saw lack of winning trophies, lack of winning mentality. And I saw an interesting quote coming out from Edwin van der Sar as well, and he was asked about United in the future. He said they're two or three signings away from competing for a title. I think it's maybe a bit more than that, but and he made the point that people are talking about Pogba wanting to stay because of this Bruno Pogba axis that everyone seems to be going on about. I'll even talk about it. But at the end of the day, Paul Pogba's going to stay if he sees himself with a chance of winning trophies. And at the moment, the past few seasons, that hasn't been an option. But given the right recruitment, maybe he'll change his mind. Some people may not even want that. A guy who just wants to stay even just when they're winning, doesn't want to stay through the bad times. But look, like what Casey said, just who can afford him is the question. And logistically, with everything that's going on now, I remember myself, Omar, and Adam McCullough were talking about the virus and how that's going to affect signings and players' contracts running out as well. I mean, when's Paul Pogba contracted to roughly? Is it the season? Is not the end of this season? Season after?
No, it's July 2022, I believe.
Oh, July 2022. So he's got, 2 years left on his contract?
Yeah, well, one and then an optional extension. That's including the extension.
So, yeah. I think logistically, where we are now, where we don't know when football's coming back, I think that's going to push any hope of anyone signing him back months and months to the point where I think he probably will end up staying just because I don't think it's possible.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, to be honest. I want to talk a bit about as well, just how good do you think that midfield would be with Fernandes and Pogba in that same midfield? Because personally, people always talk about, it's too attacking, all this stuff, but There's been a lot of midfields in through the years where you think, look at City's midfield in the last few years. They basically had one defending midfielder in Fernandinho in there, then sort of four or five really creative midfielders behind Aguero. And I think the fact that, both Bruno and Paul Pogba, neither of them are like sit back and defend tackles in all the time, but they both get around, they're both industrious, they both put tackles in. It's not like you've got like, two one matters in front of Scott McTominay. They're more sort of all round midfielders than just out and out attackers. I think that'd be a brilliant midfield. Either Matic or Fred or McTominay in behind Bruno and Pogba. Think of the creativity, the amount of games where we'll be 1-0 up after 20 minutes rather than 0-0 after 60, fighting for a last minute win against Norwich or someone. I think it'd be just an amazing midfield three. Do you think, Casey, that those two can play in the midfield together?
Yeah, I think the system, like you were saying, that neither Fernandes nor Paul Pogba have ever been like shy of putting a tackle in or shy of getting about the pitch. I mean, I think Paul Pogba was having some of the best tackle numbers in the few games he's played this season. He had some of the best tackle numbers of our team in those games he played. And Fernandes obviously has shown that he will get about the pitch, he'll show for possession and stuff like that. I feel like with whether that midfield will work is whether you can get the CDM that you need. Because obviously, like we're talking about, City, they have the all-conquering CDM, Fernandinho. When Leicester play like more of attacking midfield, they have Ndidi.
And before that, Kante as well.
Exactly, yeah. And then obviously we bring Kante into conversation. You kind of got to make the point of if Pogba or Fernandes get caught out, can you rely on who at CDM to make that tackle? Like obviously we have the options of Matic, but Matic is getting older. I don't see Matic as your starting option. I see him as you can play maybe play every other game or every couple of games just to give someone a rest. McTominay's shown that he has the tackling pedigree, but it's always been in a two. Mm. And whereas Fred's numbers have been getting better, he still does make mistakes. Like he has improved, but he still does let chances go past. I need to probably look into this, but I'm not sure about his tackle percentage. It puts in a lot of tackles, but I do think he gets dribbled past quite a bit.
Yeah, and also,
I was just saying, like, you've got to make sure that when you're playing that two-man midfield, you have that CDM, and I think that's sort of a signing we need to look at, to be honest.
And something as well, I know stats are good and stats are much better than they used to be. It used to just be like, number of passes completed, yellow cards, red cards, goals, assists, essentially one in like corners. Well, I know now there are, you can break it down to sort of lanes on the pitch, you can break it down to interceptions, you can break it down to midfield positioning percentage and all this sort of stuff. But there's something that you can only get from watching a player, and that is the sort of the feel they have and how confident you are in them shutting out teams and being in the right position. I think that's one thing with Fred. I think he's statistically improved a lot, and I think just generally he has improved a lot. But I still don't trust his defensive positioning. I know his interceptions are actually very good. So obviously, again, statistically, he has got a lot better in that regard. But there is just something about when Matic is on top form, and he's sat in front of the defence, he does something and controls a game, not in the Scholes type of way of controlling the game, but controlling the flow of the opposition's attacks in a way that I still don't think anyone else does at United at the moment. I don't think McTominay can quite do it, and I don't think Fred, as much as he's improved, can quite do it either. So I do agree with you that we maybe need something a bit different in there, something else in there. Although, Kieran, I'll ask you this, do you think that with the increased attacking potential, especially against like not the top, the teams outside the top six, do you think that we necessarily need a world-class defensive midfielder behind those two? Let's think you've got either Fred or McTominay or Matic, and then you've got Bruno, Pogba, Rashford, Martial, Greenwood. Do you think we'd be doing so much attacking, we'd have so much of the ball, that we even need necessarily a world-class CDM in most games in the season?
I do think that definitely a CDM has to be brought in, period. If not to start, but to even add more depth to the squad. Just on the topic of Pogba and Bruno playing with each other as well, I think if you are going to play both of them, one of them is going to suffer big time. I think while Bruno can do a job a lot deeper, as we saw against Wolves when he played, you're not going to see the same creative output that he was putting in games where he was playing, the Everton game, other games he's played and so on, that come to mind. And Pogba as well. We've seen Paul Pogba, he's fantastic when he's in, a bit deeper as well. But let's not forget, Paul Pogba, when he played his best football under Ollie, was playing further forward. I mean, everyone kind of said that the reason this United system is working is because they built the system around Pogba not having to track back. And that is probably some of the best football, if not the best football, we've kind of played. You could even debate since under Ollie as well. For a CDM playing behind both of them, I think that would be an ideal situation when you consider that both Pogba and Bruno Fernandes aren't just solely attacking players as well, especially Bruno Fernandes as well. I was shocked to see his defensive numbers, albeit in Portugal. But still, you know, putting them consistently in the Europa League as well. I think when you look at the best teams in the world, they have these rocks sitting in front of the back four. And whereas I do agree that Matic on his top day, you know, is in that bracket. I think he's 31. Was he 30, 31 now?
31, I think, yeah.
31 now. I think your days are numbered. I think you've got one good season out of him now. I think Fred is fantastic. But I think, to be honest, Fred would probably could even fit into that, you know, subcategory of players like Pogba and Bruno Fernandes. He's not necessarily an out-and-out sitting in front of the back four holding midfielder. He's so progressive going forward as well. He's got, the most attempted forward passes in the team and stuff like that, which is, you know, you want from a defensive midfielder as well. But like Casey said, he dribbled past quite often in games as well because he does commit himself into tackles. Yeah. But you look at Real Madrid at Casemiro, Chelsea had Kante, Barca, Busquets. A lot of these teams seem to have that defensive, even Fabinho at Liverpool, although they play in a three midfield.
Of course, Francis Coquelin of the great Arsenal teams. Of the mid-teens.
Who could forget? Abu Dhabi, Danielson, they were all there, all the greats.
Actually, Abu Dhabi was probably the best out of them three. He just couldn't play because he didn't have a body.
Abu Dhabi at Anfield must have been like 2010, 13. And honestly, it was like watching Paul Pogba out there, the way he was.
Yeah, it was sensational.
He was so like Paul Pogba technically, size-wise as well. He glided. I never really understood how good Abu Dhabi, I used to hear Arsenal fans always say how good Abu Dhabi was. It was kind of a meme, wasn't it? Because he never really did play.
No,
he actually was a pretty handy player. Just injuries during his career.
But yeah, there are all the top sides and all the successful sides of recent years, other than probably Barcelona, do have at least one player in that position. We've seen Matuidi as well, another one who did it at PSG, then did it at Juventus as well in those successful sides there. Obviously, PSG have got Idrissa Gueye coming in and they look a lot more sturdy defensively this season. So yeah, it does seem, it's like United in the last few years, obviously we've not been great. So there's always at least, there seems to be, we're a step behind in certain departments at all times. Like it seemed like under Van Gaal, everyone was going to this kind of, this like high pressing, quick balls through the line style of play, and that under Van Gaal and Mourinho we saw City and then Liverpool transition into this high press, quick balls through the lines, whereas Van Gaal it was ball, win the ball back, pass it across the defence, pass it across in front of their defence, pass it across and across and across, and it always seemed like we were behind, and then one striker formations when we were still playing two striker formations and all this sort of thing. That was a while before when Bayern Munich were excellent around the sort of 2010 time. And now it seems like we are behind on this sort of defensive midfielder thing where everyone's playing one holding midfielder who is not like as good as Matic can be. It's more of a nippier, quicker, more Fred-like character, but a Fred that is a tackler and a dynamic. Fred that is a bit more dynamic. I know Ndidi's 6'4", but he's got a lot more energy and speed than Matic has. And it just seems like that's the thing that the squad needs now, especially now Bruno's come in and you know, sort out a lot of the attacking problems we had. And it's amazing how much, you were talking before about Pogba and Bruno playing together. It is so exciting to think of, because think how good Pogba was in those sort of 13 games when Solskjaer first came in. Arguably that period, I would say the best midfielder in the world during that time, when he was just scoring and assisting almost every week, it seemed like, didn't it? He got sort of 8 goals and 9 assists in those sort of 13 games. Something astonishing. And then you think how good Bruno's been in since he's come in. And obviously they both probably can't do that at the same time because there aren't enough goals and minutes for them both to be incredible. But it is a much better midfield than we've seen for most of the season, isn't it? Like comparing Casey, like Matic, Pereira and Lingard to, you know, Fred, Pogba and Fernandes, surely we'll be a much better team with that midfield than we were with the other one. I know it seems obvious, but how far do you think this team can go with a sort of a midfield like that?
You know, I haven't thought about Andreas Pereira this entire lockdown. So thanks for that, Joe. I've managed to get away from that.
Well, I saw a training video on United's YouTube page with him on yesterday, so I thought I'd give him a mention.
Oh, no. See, you look at all your top sides. You look at all the top sides. Because we're saying that to challenge for the title, but if we're challenging for the title, we're going to be back in the Champions League, and then that means that we're going to be playing those top sides. And you look at all those top sides, they either have... There's two types of defensive midfielder. You have a defensive breaker, like your Thomas Partey's, Matuidi's, you're sort of like, those ones will get at you and they'll make sure that you know they're there and they'll tackle you and all that sort of thing. But then you have ones that you said about Barcelona, but they have Busquets, who's more of a pressure reliever or a distributor. And the fact is, without the CDM, you were saying Pogba and Fernandes, do we really need the CDM? Without someone who knows how to position and knows where he needs to be on the pitch, teams like that will tear us apart, because either the quality of the midfielders will be that once we press them, they'll still get the pass off, and then we've got two midfielders committed too high, and then there's obviously it's just Fred or McTominay or Matic on his own. Or they have the midfielders such as Busquets who they'll just pass off to and relieve the pressure and just keep pushing us, making us push higher and higher before they can break off to their better attackers, which is what I feel like Liverpool do a lot with Fabinho, is they wait till everyone presses the midfielders they don't think are as technically sound, and then they'll pass it off to Fabinho and pass it over the top to their three attackers. So the fact is looking at that sort of system, hopefully players like Pereira don't remain at the club. But if they do, I want to see him relegated down to, I'd say, rotation, like fourth, fifth choices. Lingard's good. I feel like Lingard provides an energy. Like if you need to see out a game and you just feel like you need to make the midfield have a bother, like be bothered by someone, putting Lingard on to apply pressure to the midfield, make them like lose the last of their energy in the end, like the final thirds of the game, would be a great player to have off the bench. But you've got to look at the quality that we need. We've obviously Pogba and Fernandes provide the passing, but we need someone who I think sits in that midfield and makes sure that they don't have to worry about coming back. Because if they're worried about going forward, that's just going to limit us in those bigger competitions against those bigger teams.
Kieran, do you reckon, you know, people talking in the comments a lot, Alan from Napoli, Thomas Partey is one that's linked a lot. Just before we get to that, actually, your point there, Casey, about... players who are deep lying and can just pass the ball and control games that way. One of the best examples I've seen of that recently. Do you remember when England played Holland in the, was it the
Nations League final?
Nations League final. First half, pretty tight game. Second half, Frankie De Jong completely ran the game, didn't he? From like defensive midfield, just sitting, passing.
Always looking around, man. He's ridiculous. Yeah,
and our midfield just, it was like you said, our three-man midfield couldn't even get close to one man on their team. So yeah, there's definitely multiple ways of doing it. But Kieran, who do you think would be the ideal man to come in and sort of get in behind those two, Pogba and Fernandes?
There's so many lists of names that could improve the squad massively. It just when you mentioned Lingard, Matic and Pereira there, it just clicked in my head. I'll never forget Abdul. I think whether he said it on a shout out to Abdul as well, whether he said it on a video or not, or he may have said it just in the office in passing, but he said that if you look at it objectively, kind of on paper, United probably have at that time the top three or worst midfields in the league. If you're talking Matic, Pereira,
Matic on form then as well, when he was not quite back to where he has become.
When he was almost placed in the team out of necessity because there was a lack of numbers there. And it's amazing just what one player can change. Look at Bruno Fernandes as well. If you ask who I'd like to see come in, I would love to see Wilfred Ndidi come in. I don't think that's realistic, just on the fact that, well, maybe there's more economic purchases out there. You look at Thomas Partey as well. How many times have we heard this release clause of, what is it? Is it 40 million release clause?
Something ludicrous that makes me think it can't possibly be true, but yeah.
It seems everyone has been talking about this release clause. But Wilfred Ndidi, for me, you mentioned he's 6'4", but he's mobile and Premier League proven as well. And I got a lot of stick for saying this as well, leading up to the Bruno Fernandes transfer as well. And I've been made eat my words, I suppose. But I always said that Premier League proven is always a player I'd like to edge towards. just given the position maybe we're in, we've been burnt on a lot of players over the past few years. Given, you know, the recruitment's a bit better now, a lot better. There seems to be a bit of a direction now. But I just would like to see a guy who's played, you know, week in, week out. He's only 22, isn't he?
22 or 23.
And I think he's a student at Leicester University or something like that, isn't he? He's like a second-year student. Yeah, he enrolled last year.
Yeah, he's doing it.
But indeed, for me. But I think if you're talking figures to get him out of there, you're talking, I think, 70 to 80 million, given his age. And just a good. I think that's a lot of moolah. It's a lot of peas. But for me, Wilfred Ndidi for me, 100%. Well, you could pick anyone. You could pick anyone, and they would have a great impact on the team, I think, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that before, but then remember Bakayoko at Chelsea. He was one, you know, pinching from that really successful Monaco side, and he's one of the few from that team that didn't really work out, did they? I know he went to AC Milan and looked a little bit better, but you know, it's not. It wasn't a transfer that was successful. He was meant to replace Matic at Chelsea, wasn't he?
That was a weird one. I don't know what went wrong there, did it? Because it seemed like his confidence just dipped completely. And I really rated Bakayoko as well as a player. Just look at, for example, Ndombele is another example of a player like Bakayoko who's, you know, on paper, that this guy's going to solve everything. We were all talking about Ndombele all over the summer as well, weren't we? I mean, for us, we were saying, look at his numbers, Champions League. He ran the show against, I think it may have been when Lyon beat City at the Etihad. I think he was amazing that game. And now Jose's doing, making him running around cones in car parks. So life kind of hits pretty quick. So it's there's no guarantees that anyone's going to solve anything at this stage.
Yeah, exactly. He's on the swings at the park now. Where was it? It's a car park, wasn't it?
It was a car park. I mean, just the visual alone. Of, you know, Tanguy and Ndombele doing swivels around a forward focus or a Mondeo. Just
when you play football in the car park.
Angry Portuguese man screams in.
Yeah. Accidentally kicks the ball at a parked car.
You just see the Sainsbury's lads pushing the trolleys around, trying to manoeuver in between Jose and Ndombele.
I see, in my head, it's a pub car park with like a gravel finish.
So you're thinking a small enclosed area. You're thinking small enclosed area. I'm thinking late night, maybe big car park. Not a lot of cars. Shops are shut. A lot of room. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Floodlight, floodlit.
Exactly as well. You're not going to get floodlit car parks usually in a pub. So I think for me, seems like a supermarket car park.
What car park? I'll address this to you, Casey. What supermarket car park do you think Jose Mourinho would take his players to? This is a big question. You can tell a lot about a person finding out what car park they train in, I find.
Well, I'd personally, if it was near me, I'm saying if it was near me, it'd be the Tesco car park because they have a whole other area at the one end which just doesn't get used. So that's the perfect area to train.
And multiple floors as well. Multiple.
But then
floors
again, you have to remember Tesco Extra. The problem with Tesco Extra, 24-hour, so you could get hit by a car at literally any time of the night.
You could get hit by a tackle at any time during a match. That's the mentality Jose Mourinho is going for in his players.
He could be as well, maybe. Just throwing one out there. Maybe industrial estate car park. Maybe he's feeling more likely to have more room. And it's going to be after 5 o'clock. Is there going to be anyone there? That's what I'm feeling. I think it's more industrial car park for me.
Just go under the fence.
Yeah.
Under the fence.
I think Sainsbury's tend to have good sort of topiary and hedges. So you could maybe play a little game of foot tennis over that.
Usually very well lit.
Very well lit because they've got a slightly older clientele that need that, full vision, even at sort of 9, 10 o'clock at night. What's everyone been up to then? It's been another week, hasn't it? Another week, but finally one of the first weeks where we're sort of drifting seemingly towards like a way out of all this, rightly or wrongly. Casey, what have you been up to? What do you think to this news of things sort of being gently softened like butter in a microwave?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, I think. I've just been doing uni work. I've been watching The Last Dance, if anyone's not watched it. Quality show.
I haven't seen 6 and 7 yet.
Best ones, I think. I don't know if you'll agree.
Episode 7, the end of episode 7, like the last 4 minutes, are some of the greatest TV I've seen in a while. Like, honestly, like that whole thing is fantastic.
I genuinely think it could be the greatest sports documentary of all time up there. If you're talking access and the players they talk to, I mean, I'm not a basketball fan, but I am now after watching this, on a sports kind of psychology level. It's amazing.
Oh, it's fantastic. Like, if Jordan got therapy, then he'd be dropping 4 points a game. That man is just got some problems that he just needed to sort out playing basketball.
Well, it's just amazing that he'd have an off game and someone would say something cheeky to him, and then that's game over. You've fucked it. You've got him started now. And
the amount of times in that series where they just go, it's like they say, "Oh, we talked some smack to him," and it was like, "Shouldn't have said that."
The best thing to do is just ignore him and hope he just has an off day. If you say something bad to him, it just riles him up when you've lost.
Watch the next episode, Joe. You'll get an answer to that question.
It's good, man. Honestly.
Okay, I will watch it. I'm going to watch them tonight. I didn't get a chance yesterday, but I will watch them tonight. What else have you been doing, Casey? What do you think? Oh, no, we know what you've been doing. What do you think to these lockdowns, these soft lockdowns that we're edging towards?
I feel like it's a long ways down the road, yeah. Obviously, I feel like VE Day is going to be an interesting, the 2-week peak of that, because I feel like a lot of people flouted the lockdown.
That was ridiculous, wasn't it? Can we address how ridiculous that was?
Someone was partying till 4 o'clock in the morning near me.
And that is prime virus time.
Peak 4 a.m. is when the virus is most awake.
Nocturnal virus.
I mean, like, you saw some of the things in the street. It's like, I'm just mad. Like,
yeah,
the situation that people were in.
And I know that we, 75 years is a big celebration year and stuff. But there weren't, when it was the 100-year celebration of the end of the First World War, I didn't see celebrations like this. And it's 75 years after the Second World War when, everyone knows in November, obviously, we have your poppy and oil, that sort of thing. But people don't party in the street. Do you think it's just because it's winter and people can't be bothered? When really, it's because it's the only reason they partied is because it's summer and because it was a bit of we've got an excuse, haven't we? Because since when has that been a thing?
There wouldn't be warnings to go outside if it wasn't warm. Like, people wouldn't be using the day as an excuse if it was like to go outside if it wasn't warm.
It was definitely an excuse. You've been using it as an excuse, wasn't it?
Mm.
Most people aren't even in with it.
But I've seen some things that the pubs are being told to, like, earliest September, latest. January, maybe.
No.
Yeah. Like, it's just, I feel like there's going to be interest in it. And it's also to see whether these measures come into effect, because obviously they're doing the soft measures of opening up factories and opening up things. But if people start, if the peak starts coming back, then obviously they're just going to take it straight back down a level. And then that's another month down the road. So I don't think we'll be seeing any in-stadium football.
No.
Definitely.
If anyone who doesn't know or isn't from Britain or, doesn't know what is Victory in Europe Day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is basically when the European side of the Second World War was ended. And is it called Victory in Europe? Was the sort of Asian and fighting in Asia afterwards or something? Why is it specifically Victory in Europe? Is it a different thing? Or was that when the whole war ended? Or was there still some fragments of in different continents that were still ongoing? Why is it called that?
I think there is an American equivalent to VE Day. I don't know if that's true or not, but you wouldn't put it past Americans because they are very patriotic, to be fair. Yeah. Say what you want about them. They do love their flags.
They love it. What do you think, Kieran? I saw you put your head in your hands there with the idea of not going to the pub till next year.
I haven't had a pint on draft for over 2 months now. I can't drink this anymore. Sue me for slander. I think I'm doing everyone a national favour. I don't know, man. Well, Wuhan have got their second wave now, haven't they? That's what the rumors are going around. They've got a second wave that's come in, and people have been sent tests to their homes and everything like that. I just want to get back to a world where everyone doesn't just talk about this. I know it's very hard not to just talk about
this. I agree massively with that.
Because I just can't. It's just, I turn on the telly and it's just the news and it's just depressing. And then to go onto the internet, it's just everywhere. And it's like, I don't know.
It's amazing though, isn't it? How it's not really amazing. I know it's hugely serious and it's understandable why it's taken over so much on the news and stuff. But you can tell from the way Brexit was handled, the lead up to the election everything was just so much Brexit, so much. Nothing else was on the news. And then after the election, once Brexit had basically, you know, it was still to be finalised and sorted, once the election was over, it dropped off by about 70%, the amount of Brexit coverage. And then the coronavirus comes out, and the Brexit coverage has dropped down to almost
non-existent levels,
And of course, it's a huge story, and it has to be covered all the time, and there are daily updates, rightly so, and all that, but the 24-hour news and news in general always needs a story to be happening. And it just gets to the point where if you turn the telly on, it is the only thing you're seeing at all times. And it's just, yeah, tell us what we're supposed to do it. But in between those bulletins and things, can we try to not just talk about one thing? Because it's stressful as much as anything. It's just all consuming.
I've even gotten my head around staying indoors as bad as it was at the start. And I'm sure everyone can agree. I've kind of gotten into a routine of just kind of enjoying when I go out, the limited time I can go out. And I just think there's a lot of gobshites out there who unfortunately aren't. And also as well, there's another subcategory of people as well who are just absolute dickheads about all this whole thing. I kid you not, I'm living in my uni house at the moment because I've got assignments to do. I've been here for the past month and a half since lockdown started. Me and my mate went down to the shops at Tesco's, we queued outside, and there's like a woman taking pictures of everyone standing next to each other, like old women taking pictures of like people not here. And you're just get the fuck out. Like, no, sorry, I understand, you know, you're at risk, but just I don't know. People's manners have gone out the window and fucking
the shaming of everything. Like, fair enough. One thing, if people are having parties in the streets, you want to tell them to fuck off. But if someone's, you know, goes past you in the supermarket and everyone's, you know, some of it's just, come on, we're all trying our best. Or if it feels like someone's trying their best, give people a bit of a break.
I don't know.
Someone said in the comments, America was still fighting Japan after VE Day. So that's VE Day. So that's why it's Victory in Europe Day, because like a sort of, I guessed really that, yeah, there was still stuff going on in Asia. Oh, dear. What's everyone got planned for the rest of the week? It's Tuesday now. You've got a whole week to fill. What's your plan, Kieran, for drinking? Are you just drinking every day?
I've slowed down a bit now. We had one of the lads in the house's birthdays last week, and we got a regular load of cans in for that. It wasn't a party before everyone loses their rag. It was the four of us having a few social distancing cans and chill.
You'd have to social distance from your own flat.
Yeah, but you know, well, you have to social distance. It doesn't matter. It's fine. We all took the right precautions. I'm not drinking every day, mostly because you usually drink to like kind of, I don't know, do something. And when I'm a bit pissed and I'm sat with the lads, you're just kind of sat around. Do you want to watch a film? Is there anything to watch? Oh, do you want to go? No, we can't do that. Do you want to play Monopoly? No, we've just finished our 400th game last night. We can't play Monopoly again. You're just bored. Just living day to day now, I am.
Yeah, it feels like drinking is best when it is a sort of a booster or a supplementer of another activity, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least, I mean, and sometimes being at the pub is that activity. I know that goes hand in hand with drinking, but being out of the house and doing something and then you drink along with that, that's great. But yeah, just making dinner pissed isn't really that fun, is it?
Honestly, I'm there cooking my carbonara, just absolutely blathered, just doing absolutely the dishes, ashamed of myself. Just ashamed of myself, man, honestly, but I love it.
And then you try and play FIFA or Warzone or something and you just
Don't even start on FIFA with me.
What's going on?
I'm finished with the game. I went 1-10 in my first 11 games of Foot Champs last week. I've no shame in admitting that. The game's shit. I don't put any money on it, but apparently everyone else does. Sorry I don't have 15 Legends cards in my team. Sorry that I don't abuse the game's mechanics and this, that, or the other. Sorry, I'm a casual player, but apparently the game doesn't reward casual players, does it? It rewards little Timmy who takes his mum's debit card out of her wallet and, you know, uploads 15 grand worth of FIFA points and ends up packing, I don't know, a fucking inform Jan Vertonghen. I don't know. But the game's broken. I'm finished. Pez, rant over.
Casey,
the thing with FIFA is I don't mind, like, when it was the icon cards, that's fine. When it was the Champions League card, all right, yeah, like, performance-based upgrades. When I'm getting like an 87 rated centre back Idrissa Gueye for no reason, just put into packs, and people are playing like 90 rated Rekalison because of nothing, but he's now a striker. I'm just there, just like, well, how am I meant to compete with people who have like seven icons, these cards, foot birthday, where it's just like random five star skills and five star weak foots?
The problem is,
I'm not a fan of it.
The problem is, sometimes I get, but I can't be arsed playing Ultimate Team because naturally you just fucking lose a game and you're like, bollocks. And I go on to play a bit of career mode because I actually kind of like career mode. I like just literally brain dead, just kind of playing it. And so I sim a lot of the games because, you know, you just can't be arsed playing some games in the league.
Yeah, you don't want to play against Watford at home every, you know.
Yeah, and like, you get to the end of the season and it's not even fun because they've clearly fucked up the career mode. Because and I made sure I looked at this yesterday because I thought it was weird. I've got to like the end of one of my career, like my first career mode. I think it was QPR at the moment in the championship. And I was trying to get playoffs and the Forest got promoted like 130 points. And I'm like, I went through every league and every like top three teams don't lose a single game when it's simulated. They're all on like 500 points in the league. It's just
and also no, it's annoying really. As well. Some of the tasks are weirdly difficult to contemplate and to understand. Where it's like sign 6 players to your youth team and give them 3 games, and you're like, what do you want? Do you want me to win the league, which is already difficult with a team where everyone is 90 and above, and it still doesn't just win the league. And then you still want me to play like 6 youth players as well. And then at the end of the season, when you can win every trophy and it doesn't feel like they're that grateful, does it?
No.
They're like, we've reviewed your thing and, you know, we're happy to give you another year. Happy to give me another year? I've just won every trophy available.
After an Austrian octuple, taking every Austrian, you just say, we're happy to have you.
I've won it all. And I've won. And also it's too easy to win the league and too hard to win the World Cup.
Do you take international management offers?
I take only England or Brazil.
I've never taken them in the history of FIFA. And also, what's Volta? Can someone explain that to me?
It's FIFA Street, but designed by people who've never played FIFA Street. Apparently,
my favorite FIFA career was it FIFA 14? It was the one where they first put it on Xbox One. Oh, it might have been the last one I had on Xbox where I still had my Kinect connected. And I can never remember. I was unbeaten in the league. I think I was with, I think it might have been United or it might have been Tottenham. I think I went with Tottenham because they had a good youth core. And I was like, I've signed all these young players. I had this great team going. I was like, this is the team I'm going to play career with for ages. Kinect used to pick up the sounds of your TV and take it as you were abusing the refs. So keep getting warnings like you need to stop with your language. Like you're bringing the club into disrespect. And I got my contract terminated.
What? Because
I was unbeaten.
Your Kinect. Because it was said wow, that's good. That's really good.
Like, if anyone else in the comments remembers that what happened, I unplugged my Kinect and never plugged it back in again. I was like,
can you believe, right? And we're talking about gaming a little bit here. Can you believe that Xbox brought out that first Kinect? Because the one you're talking about is the second one, isn't it? They're the first Kinect that came out with the old.
I think it was the first Kinect. It was 360. It might have been it was the last FIFA I had before I went over to 360.
But anyway, they tried to proper sell that Kinect like with bundles when the Xbox One came out. Like they would A, support it, B, that it was any good. The audacity on Xbox and on Microsoft to try and push that Kinect. It was an absolute bunch of shit, that Kinect, wasn't it? And they brought surgeons using it to open with surgeries and stuff. Come on.
Just a rehash. Do you remember the iToy from PS2? Was it the iToy?
It's an iToy.
Was it the iToy? Really? Was that what it was called? They were brilliant. They run the old PS2 because they were shit games, but you knew they were shit. They weren't trying to be anything else. They were fun shit games, not games where they reward players for uploading 15K and your mortgage worth of FIFA points to pack an 85 rated card. Sorry.
I think you've got a good team on FIFA though, aren't you?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I did do that legend SBC because I packed Mbappe like 2 weeks ago and he went for like $500,000 and I got Sol Campbell, which was a bit of a fuck you, but it could have been worse. My housemate got Ian Rice, which was just hilarious because he's just a ridiculously shit guard, I think.
Sol Campbell's actually really good. He's not horrible to play against because he's so fast.
He's like 82 pace. He's
one of those players you just can't get past him. Someone says, anyone playing Doom Eternal? Absolutely not. You've got a... you've got a PlayStation, aren't you, Kieran?
Yeah, well, I used to be traditionally always staunchly... I was even first-gen Xbox over PS2. I got that first. Me too. And then I got a PS2, I think a couple of years later, just because one on the cheap. And then I was 360 the whole way. Never catch me playing PS3, piece of shit console. And then I think everyone started saying before the PS4 came out, it was like, it's going to be free to play online, which obviously wasn't true.
It was on the PS3, funnily enough.
Oh, it
got rid of it for PS4.
Yeah,
because they couldn't pay for the security measures with free internet, which Microsoft had.
Because Sony got hacked to fuck. Do you remember that when Sony just got hacked?
Yes, they did. Yeah, I remember. Hacked. Insane. Yeah, so... But PS4 now, which I'm kind of glad, because I think they have better exclusive games. I just really want to play The Last of Us 2, although I've not heard very good things from early reviews. A lot of people saying it's a bit like, I don't know, it's just not great.
The Last of Us 2.
Yeah, a lot of people saying there's a lot of, like, I don't know. This is what I haven't obviously fucking played the game, so I don't know. But like a lot of, like, quote unquote feminist propaganda and stuff like that. Apparently, it's really.
Yeah, but where do you get your obvious news from? Just angry men screaming
I live with a lot of lads who are big gamers who like gaming news and stuff, and they were like, "Oh, apparently it's this, that, or the other." But they're probably considered cis white men.
I saw that trailer where it's a gameplay trailer where she's dancing and she kisses that girl. Have you seen that trailer?
That is good. Is that the one where they're dangling?
That looked amazing. It made me want to cry. It was like the emotion and the excitement, and I loved that. So yeah, and I guess some people will have an idea that that's like, it has to have this kind of sexual thing to it to make it be, like you're saying, very pro sort of feminism and stuff. But I just thought that was really good.
It looked good. The trailer looked amazing.
Yeah, well, really good. What about you, Casey? What else do you play other than FIFA?
I have my Xbox. I have a PlayStation Cabal on cheap for a couple of games. I played God of War recently. That's good. But I know.
You're
looking for our consoles.
I've recently, they were on sale on Xbox, the Assassin's Creed game, so I bought myself the Ezio collection. So I've been playing Assassin's Creed 2.
That's meant to be very good. Well, I played Assassin's Creed 2, the best.
Assassin's Creed, I haven't played it too. The first one I played and didn't really like it, but the Egypt one, so good.
That looks amazing. My mate was playing that. It looks amazing.
So good. It's really, really good. I'd recommend that one. The fighting's way better. It's actually more of an RPG now. You collect stuff and find stuff. People drop stuff when they die and everything. It's like an actual proper RPG with like really good climbing.
A game I would recommend to people if you're looking to play a really good campaign, a challenger game, is the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, I've heard that's good.
I got it at Christmas, so I've completed it. 100% get that game. It's a bit buggy, but it's fucking amazing. It's so good. It's difficult.
Yeah, I've heard
challenging.
It's actually meant to be really good.
There's no like.
See, I've heard the opposite.
You've heard opposite. It's amazing. Like, there's no cutscenes in it. It's like you go to a planet and then you walk back to your ship and then your ship takes off and it takes you to another planet. There's no cutscenes or anything like
Mass
that.
Mass Effect used to be a bit like. Did anyone play Mass Effect 2?
Yes.
Where you sort of you being on the ship was basically
my favorite game.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that Jedi Fallen Order is good.
Oh god, that was the worst game I've ever played. Is Mass Effect Andromeda? It's honestly terrible. Like, just so excited for that game. And it was one of the most disappointing things I've ever played in my life. But it's just not worth it.
The company builds you up to let you down.
Always builds up to let you down.
Pre-order.
Yeah, FIFA is definitely the worst culprit of that, isn't it? Where you think, right, I'll have a game. And then you go in it and you're playing against like R9 and Zidane and Garincha and all that. You just think.
And you know what's worse? You're not playing some elite level gamer. You know, you're playing a 12-year-old who's sat in his, you know, swanky room with. Mammy's debit card there. I keep harping on about it because I know I'm losing to kids and I can't deal with that. I can't deal with my masculinity being called into question by a toddler with a debit card.
Yeah. And some of them, the worst thing is some of them don't even spend money. They've just been playing every single week since the game came out and getting like weekend league rewards.
That, that's grafting the game, which I could, but no weekend league for a while.
No, we can leave for a while. Right, that's going to be all from us. I've enjoyed that. It's nice talking about games a bit. We never talk about games on here, do we, really?
Normal conversations. No. It's brilliant. Not about the virus.
It is lovely. It was really good. Thanks, Casey, for joining me. Thank you, Kieran, for overcoming technical difficulties.
Anyone who's interested in investing in the invention, we're taking it to the Dragon's Den.
The phone hasn't dropped once. That's what surprised me. That phone being dropped once.
This is what you get your money's worth. Warranty everything. It's going on Dragon's Den. Deborah Meaden Duncan Bannatyne, who's another one?
Tuukka Salminen.
Theo Bofetus, you know. Yes.
Who else have we got? Let's name as many dragons as we can before we go.
Peter Jones. Is a main.
We've got Hilary Duvet as well.
Who's the woman with the weird suits? Is that her name, Hilary Duvet? She's from like the.
That was Hilary Duvet, yeah.
She's hilarious.
Who looked like the head witch from Witches.
She looked like. Do you ever see when Homer shot Marge with the makeup shotgun? She looks like she was hit with a Homer makeup shotgun. No offense, there. She's probably a lovely woman, but
She's also worth, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds. Yeah. So it's worried too much about it.
Yeah, fuck her anyway.
Deborah Meaden as well, of course, classic.
Well, they've classic. Done. I really like Deborah Meaden. They've had a high turnover of dragons recently. I don't think Bannatyne's there. I think Peter Jones and Meaden are still there because they're mainstays of the Dragon's Den. The best thing, last thing before we go, if you want to laugh, go look up people who go into Dragon's Den with what they think is innovative ideas, but it's just a big pyramid scheme, and it's really funny, and it's pretty tragic, but it's funny at the same time.
Okay, I'll watch that. If Meaden and Jones walk, the series is dead, isn't it? Do you remember what was that American, that really short American
guy? Oh, the guy, yes, he was in like the first season or something like that.
Yeah, like brown hair, sort of side part, yes, nice fluffy light hair. If anyone can remember his name, put it in the
comments. Kind of looked like Crispin Glover, I think.
Yeah, he did. He was great. I can't remember his name. I'm never going to remember it.
I was saying, come with a side part. It looks like Crispin Glover recently when he was doing his side part in the other day.
I like a side part. I do like a side part. Danny DeVito. No, he was not on Dragon's Den, unfortunately.
Very entertaining show if he was, though.
Very entertaining. Yeah, I'd watch that as well. Right. Thank you very much, everyone at home, for joining us. Thanks, lads, for joining us here. And again, brilliant ingenuity there, Kieran, from sorting out the old problems there. We're going to be back in the morning for the news. And tomorrow, what day is it tomorrow? It's Wednesday. We should have a debate tomorrow afternoon. That'll be fun. Very good debate coming out tomorrow, actually. So make sure you tune in for that. Kieran, you absolute meme sausage. Right. Thank you very much for joining us. See you in a bit.
All right.
See ya.